progress will always come from demos, from we the people.
Greece has made a tremendous comeback. We've worked with them very closely.
The United States recognizes only one legitimate government of the Republic of Cyprus.
Nothing can break the spirit of the Greek people.
Long live the friendship between Greece and the United States of America. Ευχαριστώ. Thank you very much.
In the depths of Egypt's Sinai Desert, one can find St. Catherine's Greek Orthodox Monastery at the foot of the mountain where Moses is believed to have seen the burning bush and subsequently received the Ten Commandments. St. Catherine's is the world's oldest continuously inhabited Christian monastery. It is now also the cause of potential tension between Greece and Egypt. A recent ruling by an Egyptian court granted ownership of the land surrounding the monastery to the Egyptian state and raised a specter of the state claiming the site of the monastery itself and the monks paying for usage rights. To discuss the fate of St. Catherine's and how it may even affect geopolitics in the Eastern Mediterranean, we are joined by Mariam Huaba, a research analyst at the Foundation for Defense of Democracy.
Mariam, welcome back to the Greek Current.
Good to be with you. I love the way you say my name.
Well, you know, those of us from the region got to stay true to our traditions. Walk us through the history of St. Catherine's Monastery. People hear names, they hear monastery. Of course, all sacred spaces are kind of created equal, some more equal than others.
The Greek ones are more than others, exactly.
Give us the historic and religious significance, if you can, of this.
Absolutely. So St. Catherine's Monastery is a monastery buried deep into the Sinai Peninsula on Egyptian soil. And it is, to use your words, obviously culturally and theologically significant for a number of reasons. But there are a few things that make St. Catherine's Monastery unique. First and foremost, it is the longest continuously inhabited monastery around the world, meaning from the moment that it was founded up until now, it has not been abandoned. There have been monks living and serving at St. Catherine's upkeeping the property and the religious soul of the monastery since its founding. And what's at stake now and why we're having this conversation is essentially Egypt wants to nationalize St. Catherine's Monastery.
And how did we get here? What were the recent developments that got us into this nationalization? Because Egypt, when we'll get into this a little later, has tremendous relations with Orthodox countries. They must have been aware that this would cause a hubbub with some of their allies and partners. But what got us to this point, and what role did various Egyptian authorities, including Egyptian courts, play?
Absolutely. So I think our story starts really in May of this year, so a couple months ago. But I think to paint a better picture of what exactly is happening, we have to go back at least a couple of years and begin to understand when Egypt started to encroach on the monastery and its autonomy. And, you know, in my research, trying to understand how this court ruling came to be, things really started in 2023 when the Egyptian government decided that the monastery's monks no longer should have autonomy over who gets to access the monastery's manuscript collection, which is quite extensive and quite remarkable, and that the Egyptian government should monitor and authorize those who wish to see it. And from then, things have kind of...
Hey, what was your basis for that?
Well, the basis actually goes back to the 70s. So technically, under Egyptian law, anything that is related to antiquities, archaeological sites, and so on and so forth, is technically all Egyptian property. The monastery had been an exception to this rule because of its Greek Orthodox history and patronage. The Greek government back in the 70s worked with the Egyptian government to give the archbishop, the patron of the monastery, a unique status that kind of exempted it from those 1970 antiquities law and actually gave the archbishop citizenship. So he'd be kind of the overseer of the monastery. And ever since then, the monastery had been functioning under the status quo where this archaeological laws don't apply to it. The monastery maintains its independence and autonomy. But through the last few years, we've seen Egypt attempt to strip that autonomy from it, starting with taking away the monk's ability to grant access, and more recently, this May court order that essentially rendered the monks mere occupants as opposed to upkeepers and owners of the monastery. And that's where we're starting to get into dangerous territory.
You have described this in your piece and in other analyses as the moves against a monastery is a microcosm of Egypt's broader campaign against its Christian minority. And this is today's Egypt and not the Muslim Brotherhood Egypt.
Right.
What does this one case, what does the monastery tell us about the trends in religious freedom across Egypt?
Look, it's interesting that you bring up the Muslim Brotherhood, especially with the conversations happening in D.C. now about designation, foreign terrorist designation, targeting the Muslim Brotherhood. Obviously, we had in the post-Arab Spring Egypt, we had a Muslim Brotherhood leadership, a president, Mohamed Morsi, and then we had President Sisi take over in his stead after the second revolution, I can call it, that happened in Egypt. And ever since then, there's been, good signs and bad signs with relation to how Egypt looks to its Christian population and sees it as part of the Egyptian identity and the modern Egyptian state. There's obviously been good developments, but there's also been some pretty troubling ones, including this culture of impunity that Egypt so carefully crafts, it seems like, where perpetrators of Coptic attacks against Coptic places of worship, Coptic businesses and homes, the kidnapping of Coptic girls and women, which is an epidemic, this culture of impunity that really does not punish any of these things. And the way I'm looking at St. Catherine's and its attempted nationalization is we're taking the persecution one step up. We're moving on up on the totem pole of not only are we the perpetrators of impunity and no punishment for those who attack its Christians, but now the state is actively engaging in nationalization of Christian institutions, which is really a dangerous step.
And since the Christian institution that we're talking about at issue right now is Greek Orthodox, I alluded to it before, but this may be putting or could potentially put in jeopardy ties with Greece or Cyprus, who with Egypt and Israel have formed the backbone of Eastern Mediterranean cooperation. Why would Egypt risk these diplomatic ties with these international stakeholders and vis-a-vis the United States that has a government who is openly talked about from the president to the secretary of state and the vice president about protecting Christians worldwide?
Well, I'm actually going to turn the tables on you here, Andy, and have you explain to us the Greek side of this. But before I do that, look, Egypt is in an interesting moment because they're dealing with so much domestic instability as a result of what's happening in Gaza and its failing economy and so on and so forth. So I think Egypt's calculations are quite different than they would be if it was a prosperous, economically flourishing state. When it comes to this monastery, I understand that there's a tourism element of it. And part of the logic behind the nationalization is Egypt really wants to lean further into its tourism sector, which is already a real big section of its income when we understand how Egypt curates its state funds. So I think there's a weird calculus for why Egypt is doing this, but I would love to hear the Greece side because, you know, I think it's an important aspect of understanding Egypt's decision-making process.
Well, definitely for Greece, I think Greece feels some level of betrayal. And when you see Egyptian officials coming to Greece, they're always saying, no, we're going to fix this, we're going to come up with some agreement. But we covered this earlier this week. There is a pattern of Christianity in retreat in its historic birthplace. And when years ago we used to say of the original patriarchates, which was Constantinople and Antioch, Jerusalem, and Alexandria, we felt good about Christianity in Jerusalem and Alexandria. But in a week where you have the Syrian foreign minister going to Greece and telling Greece and Cyprus, we're going to protect Christians to have Egypt and maybe Israel kind of have Christians on in the retreat. I'm not sure that even for tourist reasons that the juice is worth the squeeze here. I think it brings a lot of risk here. And frankly, again, as we discuss, it resembles the fears that we had last decade about the Muslim Brotherhood and Egyptian Christians. So this leads the question, the third country, since we talked about Greece and Cyprus, and let's also recall that Cyprus is going to be holding the presidency of the EU coming up, and that brings in another wrinkle into this equation. But let's talk about the United States. You work, you allies in the United States, you're talking to U.S. policymakers, and I think we agree this is probably the most pro-Christian-leaning administration and Congress in recent memory. This administration, of course, it's their second time around, but they have a Congress that more leans, is more in lockstep ideology. What do you think, first of all, do you think there's been enough attention paid to this in Congress? And if not, since I'm saying if not, it's a rhetorical question, what do you think Congress is going to do or the administration when they finally start paying attention to this?
Right. Great question. And I'll just back up a little bit and emphasize an important point that you made and an eloquent one at that, which is Christianity in decline or Christianity in retreat, as you put it. I think it's an interesting point in time where we stand because we are seeing forces of evil come into the picture more, whether it's the October 7th attack or the rise of Islamism or so on and so forth. And we're really in desperate need of bold, clear-eyed leadership. And I think that's where Greece is a unique example of that. I mean, correct me here if I'm wrong in this description, but to my understanding, the Greek government and the Greek church, Orthodox Church, are kind of an intertwined institutions and do things in lockstep. And I think, please correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't think so. I think they share interests, but in terms of supporting Christians in the Middle East, absolutely. They're both sponsors or somewhat protectors, godfathers of those Christians.
Right. They reflect each other's interests for sure. And I think we need a lot more of that. We need a lot more of bold Christianity and bold Christian leadership at every level and not just cultural preservation and religious, fighting against religious persecution. Anyway, I digress for a moment. I just wanted to really highlight that point that you made. When it comes to the United States, has this instance received enough attention in Washington circles and beyond? I think the short answer is no. Obviously, we're talking about it now after I've spent a couple of weeks doing the research and trying to understand what exactly is happening with the court ruling in the monastery and so on and so forth. It definitely needs more eyeballs. And I think because the details were murky, and that is an Egyptian strategy, by the way, to keep the details murky, we need more people expressing a vested interest in this and communicating that this is a U.S. interest. And I'm going to make a sharp point here, so please stick with me. I don't think my role or the reason I wrote this piece is to like galvanize interest. I don't see myself in that way. I think I see the role of my advocacy and the piece I wrote for the Free Press as me pointing to the fact that there is a vested interest. I'm not trying to manufacture one. I mean, I talk about the foreign military funding, the fact that the United States gives $1.4 billion to Egypt every year, and the fact that as part of that conditions, it is codified United States law that Egypt has to agree and enact certain conditions when it comes to human rights and religious freedom. And in proceeding with how they've acted towards St. Catharines, they are actively breaking those conditions. And that is where the United States needs to step up.
And, you know, being part of both of us a few years ago were part of at a uniquely hopeful time when there were the Abraham Accords, an attempt to bring Christians into the dialogue, calling Abraham's missing child.
Yep.
Israel and Muslim countries, the Jews and the Muslims were talking, getting the Christians at the table. And let's just remind our listeners, but to remind them how Christian the Middle East was at the turn of last century. And the less diverse, the less Christian, and just overall diverse it has become more dangerous. Maria, thanks for joining us. We're going to keep abreast of this because as we're watching Russia's moves in other theaters, we know Russia has a vested interest because it also has been on the attack against Orthodox Christianity or Greek Orthodox Christianity in Egypt and in Africa. Thanks for joining us again on The Greek Heart.
Good to be with you. Thanks.
In other news, struggling with low deportation rate, only about 1 in every 4.5 rejected asylum seekers across the EU is actually repatriated. The bloc is on a mission to make it easier and faster to return rejected asylum seekers. Greece's new migration law, unveiled last month following a sudden increase of arrivals in Crete, seeks to enshrine its keep-out message. Under the new law, migrants could again apply for asylum, but instead of being freed into open camps where they would have some ability to come and go while their cases are adjudicated, they would be held inside closed prisons. Successful applicants would be released, but those rejected, a rate now running at more than 50%, would confront a hard choice, voluntary deportation or potential jail sentences of 2 to 5 years. And Energy Minister Stavros Papastavrou dismissed on Friday a report in Bloomberg which said that Libya's eastern-based parliament is expected to ratify a maritime deal with Turkey, telling Sky TV that Greece's politics are not determined by reports, but by actions on the ground. Last June, the European Council declared that the Libya-Turkey MOU violates the sovereign rights of third country and is not in line with international law, and later declared the memorandum unlawful. This is Andy Zemanidis filling in for Thanos Tavelis. Thanks for tuning in to The Greek Current.